This is the SMB Community Podcast, the longest-running MSP-focused podcast in the industry.
I'm James Kernan. My background's IT sales, marketing, and leadership, and most recently, M&A advisory services.
And I'm Amy Babinchak. I help MSPs run stronger, more profitable firms from a tech-first perspective.
Here, you'll find practical insights for MSPs and IT service providers. Powered by Small Biz Thoughts.
Hey, Amy, good morning.
Hey, good morning, James. Let's go.
All right. Hey, we've got an exciting agenda. We're going to kick off with the MSP question of the week, and then we're going to continue our discussion about the top 20 M&A questions. And the question that Amy and I are going to talk about is probably one of my favorites. Then we're going to talk about why MSPs struggle in hiring A players. And then we've got a topic around your quote turnaround. When you get quotes in your business, what's your average turnaround? We wanted to talk about that. And we're going to wrap up with tales from the field, and we're going to talk about valuations. All right. So we'll just kick off right at the top. And the question that came in this week was a good one. It's, is EOS good for small businesses? And I know you and I from time to time have talked about EOS, but what are your thoughts relating to, you know, does size really matter for EOS, for that EOS framework for an MSP?
I think it does. I think you can be too small for EOS. EOS is about putting processes in place so you don't meeting yourself to death and mm-hmm. make progress on your goals. And if your business is very small, you don't have time for meetings anyway. So, yeah. You know, you're not going to have those problems, those growing pains that you get when you suddenly have, you know, 6, 8, 10 people around and you have to work as a unit instead of as individuals.
I differ slightly on this. I think I've been involved in a lot of EOS implementations, and the probably smallest one I think I've been involved with is a 4-person company. And you bring up a good point. You know, if your culture is where you don't meet and you're already sharing information and communication is good, then, you know, this structure or those meetings may be a waste of time. But what I've seen, especially with the small MSPs, is normally the owner operator, the business owner, he's meeting with each individual sometime during that week, either ad hoc or maybe on a regular cadence. And then you add up all the meeting time that that person has to do just to get updates from everybody. And, you know, he could have maybe one meeting where he gets all the information. EOS, according to the book from Gino Wickman, it's really geared at small businesses, mid-sized businesses, and large. It's really large and small would get great value. And you would look at it like, hey, you know, how do I get all my employees to act like owners? And it gives you accountability, gives you transparency, motivation, and communication. All will improve with the structure that EOS has. So I would say yes. I would look at that, you know, if that's something that you want to do. And then one last little tip, you know, read the book. The one I like, it was the Cliff Note version, Amy, and it was called What the Heck is EOS? And that one's a really easy read, short, you know, just it's a simple book. That's where all the light bulbs clicked for me when I read that book.
You know, I think that if you are that small 4-person or even smaller, actually, reading the books might be enough to mm-hmm. get your head wrapped around of what sort of meeting cadence you need with your employees, you know, when you're getting those first few people.
Yeah.
I like your idea of ownership, but, you know, we're not talking about ownership of the company so much. We're talking about ownership of their job, right?
Yeah.
Everybody mm-hmm. knows what their responsibilities are, and they take ownership over those specific responsibilities. So everybody knows what they're accountable for and what they're supposed to be doing. And yeah. that, yeah, EOS does help an owner focus.
All right. So the next topic I want to dig into is actually right out of your book. So this is near and dear to your heart. But I love talking about just one of the top 20 M&A questions that came out of your book. And this was one of my favorite ones. Should you run your business like you're going to sell it? And to me, when I heard that question, it's like, well, what does that look like so everybody understands? So what does it look like if you're running your business like you're going to sell it?
Well, you know, this is a topic that you and I have actually discussed here on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, we both landed in the thing where you maybe shouldn't run it like you're going to sell it every day, mm-hmm. right? Not in the beginning. And yeah. I know, you know, I've heard people in conferences, right? Run it like you're going to sell it, right? And they'll encourage people to optimize all their processes and, you know, be ready for that phone call because you never know when it's going to come in. And I disagree with that a little bit because when you're getting your business ready to sell, you are optimizing your processes and you know, just making everything perfectly understandable and reader by a buyer, you know, correcting any contracts that are out of line with your other contracts, doing all these kinds of things. The thing that can happen, though, is that when you're getting ready to sell a business, you don't want to be in a place of risk because a buyer is going to be very leery of that. But if you're growing a business, you have to be in a risk profile. You have to be taking those risks. So right. That's why I say you can't always be running your business like you're going to sell it. You just need to sometimes run your business.
And that's why what came to me was, what does that look like for everybody? And it's different for everybody. I think from my standpoint, you're just implementing best practices that make your business scalable, more transparent. You know, it's you're able to grow and motivate your employees. These are just simple best practices, like good, strong MSAs in place, right?
Right. Yep.
Having clean and accurate accounting. You want no one single client representing more than 15% of your top line revenue. Those are just simple things, but those are things that you should do. And back to your comment, I kind of chuckled when you said that. It's like, you don't want to be telling your customers that, oh, we're getting ready to sell one day, or tell your employees we're gonna leave one day. You know, that I think that would scare away business, right? Or scare away your employees.
Most of your things you listed off there are absolutely true. You have to have a well-run business. And I keep telling people it's never too soon to start running a better business. So you can absolutely be doing that. And there's a lot of things in the book that are just simple best practices of the way you should be running your business. But the example of the 15% client is perfect because that's a problem when you go to sell your business. But if your business is growing and you land yourself, you know, a big client that's suddenly a big chunk of your business, you have to evaluate, is that big client driving us toward more big clients? Like, is this a shift in our business and we're going to go more into that mid-market space? Or is this an anomaly and ultimately a distraction, even though it's big, right? It'll prevent us from growing our main part of our business because we've got this big distraction over here. So that's a really good example of, you know, if you were getting ready to sell your business and a great big client came along like that, you'd probably wouldn't take it because it would mess up your selling when you go to sell it. But if you're in a growth phase, you're like, yeah, I'll take that on because we want to move in that direction, right?
It's different when you're starting your business and it's different when you're getting close to selling your business. One thing I think is really important too is you want minimum involvement from the owner at the end. Okay, you can't do that in the beginning. You're the owner operator. You're the jack of all trades. You're doing everything, right? And you need to hustle. But towards the end, you don't want to be involved in every single day-to-day process, or it's going to detract value from the business. So that's one other thing to think about towards the end when you're getting ready to sell, right?
Yeah. Yep. If your business, we say your business has somewhere between a 20 and 30 year lifespan, somewhere in there is probably when you're going to sell it. That's what happens in most cases.
Yeah.
And so when you get to that point, your job is to give away your job.
Yep.
Right. So all those hats you're wearing, all those things you're doing, you have to find other people in the company that are going to take those things on so that you can begin to back away, makes your company more sellable in the end, for sure.
Yep. Yep.
I want to make sure you know about something that's coming up this June. The SMB Online Conference is back June 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And this one is built for operators like you. The theme is profitable is enough, which runs counter to a lot of what you hear in this industry. This isn't about hyper growth or exit multiples. It's about running a business that works on your terms. 3 days, online, noon to 3:30 Eastern. 12 sessions across pricing, service delivery, AI, M&A, private equity, people, and culture. All practitioner speakers, no vendor keynotes. It closes with a session unlike anything you've seen at a conference. I'm going to read anonymous submissions from attendees, what keeps you up at night about your business, and respond live. No script, real answers. Small Biz Thoughts community members get in free. Go claim your ticket. Everyone else, registration is $399. SMBOnlineConference.com. That's SMBOnlineConference.com.
All right, another topic that caught my eye, there was an article that I read a while back called, you know, I Hired Him Anyway. And then it made me think of, you know, one of the common issues I run into when I'm talking to new MSPs and learning more about their business, what's working and what's not working, is their inability to recruit great people, right? Especially small MSPs. And there was a presentation I watched on recruiting, and it said for every one position that you're trying to hire, you need to interview at least 20 people. Okay. And I'm like, oh, 20, you know,
that's a lot of people.
That was a lot of people. That's a lot of people.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know if I agree with that. And I do things like, when I'm communicating with them via email or trying to set up a Zoom or a Teams meeting so I can see them face to face and interview them, I'm watching how they write, how they respond. You know, are they professional? Do they respond right. quickly? There's all sorts of other little things that you should be analyzing right from the get-go. And I don't know if you need to interview 20 people, but don't be that MSP business owner that interviews one person. Oh, we found Superman. We're going to hire right. You know, it's like interview multiple people, because that story that I read was they hired a mediocre person and they ended up firing them 3 months later because it just wasn't a fit, wasn't work, but they just didn't have time to continue to interview and try to find that right person. And the cost of mishires is staggering. So
it is. Yeah, that's a really bad idea.
Yeah,
you should never compromise. You should know what you need. Right. So in my MSP, I had mostly very highly skilled technical people, and I wanted people that could talk to clients. And we got a bunch of those. And then one day I was like, you know, I just need a guy who will show up to work and be super techie.
Right.
And so that's an entirely different process. Like, he was never going to be great at talking to clients. He was okay. We were able to bring that skill level up a little bit, but I just needed somebody to be able to assign projects and answer the phone and just love that process and be that kind of old school tech guy.
Yeah.
But I only needed one of them.
Yep.
Because everybody else could do some of the tech work, but they could also do all that higher level client work as well, which was super important to the way that we operated. So it's really important to know what you need when you go to hire, and try not to hire when you're in a crisis. Because then you'll make that stupid mistake, right? You'll hire the first person that comes along that looks decent.
Yeah.
Instead of comparing.
Fortunately for me, I was always part of companies that were growing and scaling really quick. So I just had that mindset where I was always recruiting. I always wanted to have resumes of good people on my desk, so I'm not in that panic situation like you just talked about. And then when we found a superstar, you know, we just figured out a way to get that person plugged in somehow, way, shape, or form. The skill set on the resume and their experience and their background is only 50% of what it takes to work for our company. The other 50% was, are they a culture fit? What's their personality like? And culture fit, you know, do they represent the core values that we have for the business? And we would ask specific questions around the core values to see how they would react to it. But that's a really important part, I would say. So a couple things I wanted to share there. Another topic that came up this week was, you know, what is your average quote turnaround? And so for your MSP, Amy, when you had maybe like a product quote or a service quote, did you, one, have a policy or at least an expectation of how quick you want to turn it around?
Yeah, we didn't have an official policy on that. And it didn't bother me if it wasn't super quick.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's just part of the pile of work that we're going to be doing, because as soon as I send that quote, the client thinks you're going to start that, whatever it is, that project, that thing, you're going to start that tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We started scheduling the project into our workflow and sent that quote then, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you certainly can't drag it out. Like, I can't send it a couple months later, but I could, instead of sending it this week, I can send it next week. And then that would put it in the right slot for actually getting that work done on it with a reasonable expectation.
That sounds like that's an existing client of yours that you felt pretty certain you're going to win that project when you quote it.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say? Okay.
That's fair to say. That's the only type of work we did, right? As MSPs with contracts, we were never quoting work for clients that we didn't already own.
Okay.
Right?
Yep. That's actually an interesting point, because I know there's mixed feelings on that. So existing clients, I think, are important, but also net new prospects. You know, when you have a quote opportunity, how quick do you want to turn that around? And being on the sales and marketing side, I used to always tell technical people, I said, well, how fast would you respond if your biggest client server went down? It'd be all hands on deck. You guys would probably stay up all night and work all weekend until the client was taken care of, right? I said, that's, you know, my expectation was I wanted to have that same sense of urgency, especially with new prospects. We had an informal expectation or policy that 1 day or less on product quotes, or 2 days or less on service, like projects, or if we're quoting managed services to someone. We wanted to turn that around. And we always wanted to make sure the salesperson was able to communicate to the client or the prospect when they get the quote back. The longer you wait, you know, the less likely you are to win that deal, especially if it's a prospect. They're going to just go with someone else.
Yeah. So, James, I'm totally with you when we're talking about a new MSP client. On those, when we go to the meeting, we want that quote out to them later that afternoon or the next day at the latest. That totally has a sense of urgency, because we don't want them to forget anything about that meeting that they just had with us and how awesome we are.
Right.
So for sure, I'm with you on the sense of urgency on that. We just never did that other type of work that you were talking about, like project prospecting.
Tales from the field.
So I want to tell a quick story. I was doing evaluation this past week. And it was a scenario where there was a buyer and a seller. They had contacted each other. Sounds like they were really close to coming to term on how this buyout was going to look, but they wanted to get an independent third-party valuation. And the quick high-level notes were, when I studied the financials, it was they had good top-line revenue, you know, almost a couple million dollars. They had good net income, you know, about $375,000. They had a great MRR, so really high MRR. And remember the sweet spot we kind of said, Amy, 60 to 80%? Mm-hmm. Well, they were 80%+. Okay.
Nice.
They had a good geographical city, a major metropolitan city, and a solid team in place. Okay. So on the surface, like, wow, those are all thumbs up there. But on the flip side, there were no MSAs, no contracts, no brick and mortar office. It was all virtual. There were no W-2 employees. Everybody was 1099. And then they had one client that represented over 50% of the top line revenue.
Oh, my God.
And then the owner was like, no, I don't want to stick around. I want to leave right away. So like, those are all red flags. So the first part was all beautiful, right? And helped the valuation. And what's going to do, it's going to affect the multiple, right? Mm-hmm. But then on the flip side, you know, all these other negatives. And it got to the point where, well, here's my professional opinion now of where the business is at. And, you know, it's like, well, should I or do I have time to fix some of these things? It's like, well, no, not now. I mean, if you're going to sell. But, you know, what are your thoughts, at least on the red flags? Like, the no office is an interesting one. I keep hearing more and more buyers prefer, you know, a brick and mortar office unless they're local and they don't want an office. They're going to blend people in.
Yeah, you know, I never had an office, so my bias is to say no, it's not really a red flag.
Yeah,
May depend, you know, on the type of buyer that's coming in. So the other things are more significant to me. And he's lucky, I think, with those red flags to get a buyer actually even on the hook.
Yeah.
You know, 50% in one client, that is a major risk. And I've seen buyers just go, well, we can't really count that 50% because if that one client were to leave, the buyer would start losing so much money on this deal.
Yeah.
So yeah. either they're going to take the value of that 50% one client and drive it to zero, or they're going to pay you per performance on that client, right? So, well, yeah. as long as we're able to keep it, we'll give you a percentage of the profits we make. But
over
we're not going to give
time,
you multiples
yeah.
on it. You know, right. It's too much risk.
Yeah.
Not having W-2 employees, yikes. That's a big risk too, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your experts are not very tethered to your business, right? People hire 1099 employees so they don't have to pay benefits. Employees that don't get benefits are not loyal at all to the company that they're working for, and they might be working for multiple companies. So then massive red flags in this business.
Yeah. And the no contracts. I mean, that was a big one.
Yeah.
You know, and I keep running into this more and more. It almost feels like 50% of the MSPs I talk to, oh, no, we do have an MSA, but it's month to month, you know, or it's really an SLA, you know, or just kind of outlines our response times and things like that. So, you know, there's a lot of good companies to get MSA templates. I think MSAs are really important, managed service agreements to have in place, especially for clients that represent, you know, a majority of your business, right? Those are even more important.
You're right. It is important for every client needs to have a contract, even if it is a month-to-month contract. They need some kind of contract because what that does is it sorts out the businesses that are out there that want to be in business with you
yep.
and those that are just looking to hire somebody on a once-off, right? So
yeah.
We always sorted potential clients out right away. Like, will you sign a contract? And if they said no, we're like, okay, we'll see you later. Because that told us that they weren't going to be committed to us as we wanted to be committed to them.
Yeah.
So for me, it wasn't so much the contents of the contract. It's that commitment to, yeah, we want to form a relationship with your company and have you be our people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Those are all red flags and will bring the value down for sure. Doesn't mean it's impossible to sell the company. It just makes it harder.
It just makes it harder and it makes it, it's devaluing your asset.
Yeah.
You know, if this business had even group of clients across the board without that 50%er and they were all under contract, he'd probably get 3 times as much money for that business as he's going to get.
Yeah. All right. So, hey, as we wrap up, you know, we got some things coming up here in the near future, just from an event standpoint. Wanted to highlight, we've got the Small Biz Thoughts online event coming up June 23rd through the 25th. If you haven't signed up for that, make sure you do. I'll be talking on a panel there on the 25th. Looking forward to that. And I think the theme of that event, Amy, is called Profit is Enough.
Yeah, so, and we're going to be on the same panel. And then
awesome.
I hop in my car.
All right.
And I drive to Omaha right after that.
Yep. For the mastermind event, July 30th and 31st. So looking forward to that event as well. But that's an in-person event and should be a lot of fun here in July. So I think that's a wrap. If anybody has any questions, comments, or you want to submit audio or video to us, go ahead and do that through the smbcommunitypodcast.com website, or you could reach out to james@kernanconsulting.com. We'd love to hear from you. Until next time, sayonara.
Thank you for listening and or watching. Dave breaks down the IT news of the day on his show, The Business of Tech, with bonus content on the weekends.
Watching this on YouTube? Be sure to like and subscribe so you always know you've got our latest episode. We'd love to hear from you, so feel free to use the contact form on the SMB Community Podcast webpage. That's smbcommunitypodcast.com. Or leave your comments on our YouTube episode page. Produced by Picture This Video. Part of the MSP Radio Network.